Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Darren, that was a heck of a main event match. It ended as I thought it was going to. I think it ended as most people thought it was going to because of how compelling Sami Zayn's promos have been leading into this gauntlet match and how the stakes seem to be so high. But I do give WWE credit by doing about all as much as they could without wasting our time on building up everybody with vignettes, video packages, promos, especially Chad Gable, raising the stakes, emphasizing the stakes that he didn't want his daughter to be disappointed again. She cried last time he lost, and this was his chance to redeem himself. And then they just went out and had a good match, and it came down to Sammy and Gable. Gable stayed a good guy, despite the frustration that Sammy beat him. By one, he could have beat Sammy when he got to the ring. Sammy was beaten down from the previous battles he had in this lengthy match that ran over 40 minutes. But he said, I don't want to win this way. He gave Sammy time to stand, and then he ended up losing, and then he was a good sport afterwards. I just thought they told the story really well. I don't really have anything to complain about. What did you think?
No, I have no complaints about that whatsoever. They did such a good job of building up Chad Gable. I honestly wouldn't have been surprised if he had won that match or if they had made it a three-way, because since they had built Sammy's story up so well, I really thought that they weren't going to go the three-way route. But they did all the little things. The video package was excellent. I noticed that they got rid of the shush when Chad Gable came out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, no nonsense.
Yep.
He had on a new ring outfit and not the kind of silliness, colorful outfit that he had. This one was more business, more main event oriented, I guess you could say. But I'm curious to where they go with him after this. It makes storyline sense for Sammy to win by all means, but they really did an effective job of making you think Chad Gable could take this or some of the other competitors, such as even they started last week with Ricochet, someone who's an underdog. And he did a good interview as well, and they did video little packages or promos with everyone else. So yeah, they built it well. Everyone had a little chance or a reason to win.
Yeah, when I said in my initial thoughts that they did everything they could without wasting our time, I don't think most people thought heel Bronson Reed is gonna win and take on Gunther in a one-on-one match at WrestleMania. But you have to, if they're gonna be in the match, you gotta give some attention to them, and they did just enough that if, you know, Bronson Reed is your favorite, you had something to go on. They weren't just writing him off completely. They gave not equal time, but sufficient time to everybody. But it did come down to the two most likely. But even in just in telling the story, I think there was drama. I'm trying to recount all the little segments of the match, but I think there was drama in every one over who was going to win. And there was just some really good action, near falls, drama. I mean, there's a time when WWE didn't put this much effort into any match each year other than the Royal Rumble. And this came across as something where they're like, we have this much time to work with, these commercial breaks. Here's what we want to do coming in and out of the commercial. We got to time it out right. Here's the drama. Here's the crescendo. We want every move to count. They just, you know, collectively put on, and I don't, you know, it's the third hour Raw. Fewer people are going to be tuned in than were at the beginning. And as good as Gunther is, and as much as the IC title means something, it's, you know, not likely to hold the audience as well as if they promised a Cody promo at the end. You know, they just top stars and world title situations and celebrities tend to draw bigger ratings. But if they were going to get fill 3/4 of an hour at the end of Raw on a match that doesn't involve the world title picture or celebrity, this did it. So, just again, thumbs up.
Absolutely. They couldn't have done a better job with that. Even, I mean, Nakamura was a threat the way he's been built up over the last few months with Cody and everything. So he had a chance as well. So very well done.
What do you think the story with Sammy is going to be now that we know? I mean, we've talked about it a little on various podcasts, you know, that the Sammy has made this seem, this isn't just a match to him. You know what I mean? He's talking about, you know, hitting a peak for the Montreal match against Roman. And there's this angst and despair and, insecurity over what's next. And he's made the WrestleMania match so important. It'll be a great moment for fans if they play it straight and Sami unseats Gunther and they just decide to really build up Sami. But there's a bigger part of me that thinks they're telling a different story with Sami, and Sami will be another victim, and that they won't have Gunther lose clean, maybe to anybody, before he moves on to the top main event world title picture. That might be some other situation where he loses the title. And then what happens with Sami if he comes up short? So talk about the your prediction and also the pros and cons of different directions that seem to be on the table at this point.
Yeah, I think at this point you could play it straight. You make a WrestleMania moment, Sami the underdog beating the undefeated long-term champion. I think that's an excellent way to go. If they were planning on turning him heel, yes, you could have him lose and then the bitterness and fallout from that. But if you want to peak this story, nothing wrong with giving him the big win at WrestleMania. It doesn't harm Gunther in the least. I don't think he'll just go on to something else. It doesn't tarnish him, bring him down a peg or anything. Sure, you have one loss in, what is it, how many years since he won the title? It doesn't tarnish him at all. I kind of hope they go for the straightforward, give Sami his run, because he's earned it. He was main evented last week and kind of was partially responsible for the big turnaround and leading him into the hot period. Maybe it's kind of his little reward to give him the Intercontinental Championship.
I you know, normally I would say, you know, book bravely, do clean finishes, everything will be fine. There's something about Gunther and the length of his reign and how much I think that has elevated him and how much they've pushed it. And I love Sami. I mean, Sami's a great character. He's done, you know, really good stuff. At times he's seemed down and out and forgotten about and discarded, and he's made comebacks and had great moments. And I'm not going to be sad or frustrated or, you know, thinking it's a huge mistake if he beats Gunther. But I do think it hurts Gunther if he loses to anybody before moving to the world title picture. And I won't even say especially Sami, because probably Sami's would hurt less than most people who are conceivable that would beat Gunther, because it wouldn't feel like some passing of the torch. Or, you know, if Braun Breaker beat him, for instance, it might seem like, oh, Gunther wasn't that good after all. Braun's the big star. If Sami does it, it's just this sort of Cinderella comeback story of this underdog who overcame a big obstacle. So all that said, something like I'm pitching for it. But I think having Gunther not lose the IC title by pinfall or submission is an option that they're thinking of. And I don't love that. That comes with its own negatives. But if Gunther just does, you know, they talk about Roman. Oh, the last time he lost a singles match was this, and that was a DQ. And they talk about, you know, last time, any time a big star loses, Cody or whomever, they're like, they talk about how long it's been. I don't know if they want to reset the clock on Gunther when they move him to the main event picture. So again, I don't want to find myself advocating for a triple threat match where somebody pins somebody and Gunther's not involved and that's how the title changes hands, or a last man standing match where it's like, you know, did Gunther get up before 10? You know, it looks like he did, but a decision is final. I don't want to advocate for that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they don't look for an out when they move him away from the IC title picture.
Yeah, it's all going to come down to the presentation of how they present this loss, if they're headed in that direction, of course. If they could just kind of play it up as on one night, Sami was the better man, and just kind of emphasize that going forward, that for one night he shined brighter than Gunther, and play it that way. Or if they have another kind of creative way of presenting that, that's going to be a major part in how they want to tell that story, gestation. And I have faith in them, the way that they're telling stories like that, where they won't diminish him too much.
Yeah, no, and yeah, it's not, like I said, not a disaster, but I'm suspicious they're up to something else. If Sami loses, gets frustrated, turns heel, I could see him being an opponent of Cody. Not necessarily SummerSlam, but maybe SummerSlam, but maybe some, you know, one of the other non-SummerSlam WrestleMania type events. I mean, we've seen Sami as a heel not that long ago, but I think he can reinvent himself if he just sort of has this meltdown and cracks after losing. It's tough then to justify him getting a title shot if he loses to Gunther, though. So I don't know. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by it. Gunther's presentation is just so strong right now. I mean, his confidence in that backstage interview and then walking out on the stage, again, you can drop him into any era and he can headline with that demeanor, that look, and that ring skill and his promo work.
Yeah, he's a top-level guy, and I really like that they talked to him to see the ramifications of how he felt of who might win the match, and they interviewed him right before it. So that was a very nice touch. And then the stare down at the end, of course, was good as well. So, yeah, even though he didn't even get in the ring, he was still a centerpiece of the whole segment, the way they built around him. So, yeah, good for him.
Yeah. All right, well, let's pause and introduce ourselves on the show, and then we'll move on to phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 11th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, pwtorch.com, and also our podcasts, including the Wade Keller Hotlines, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows and Podcasts, The Fix with Todd Martin that I host, Everything with Rich and Wade that I host, Post Pay-Per-View and PLE Roundtables that I host, and more. Some of those are VIP exclusive for our VIP members, and others are free like this one, although our members get them with the ad and plug commercial breaks edited out, so that's nice. You can get VIP information at pwtorch.com/govip, pwtorch.com/govip. That includes, by the way, 30-plus years of archives of our newsletter, our contemporaneous coverage, week by week by week, headline stories, big name, transcribed, long-form Torch Talks with some of the biggest names in pro wrestling, such as this year's Hall of Famer Paul Heyman, talking on the record in the 90s about controversies in his pre-ECW days and then during his time in ECW. Lots of great stuff in our unmatched library of podcasts, retro radio shows, and newsletters. So if you haven't voted VIP member, check it out. I think just the subscription fee will be worth it just to have our free shows be ad and plug free, and you're supporting us at the same time, or just for the VIP shows you're missing out on, or just for the library that's always there waiting for you on a rainy day, or you can research history and see some real hard-hitting journalism and editorials and commentary during many different eras of pro wrestling that we've covered. And it still feels weird, Darren, watching Raw. It's in the news today a little bit, and that's why he's on my mind a little bit more. But Vince McMahon with this lawsuit and other people, you know, being named in it, which we'll be covering tomorrow on the flagship. Just thinking about Raw and all the little tweaks that are a little bit different than Vince McMahon would have done. Of course, his fingerprints are still all over, you know, in general, what WWE has become. Same with Kevin Dunn being gone. Just feels like this new era of WWE, even though it's been a smooth transition in terms of the on-air product, it has evolved. And I just, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about Vince McMahon, given, you know, the accusations against him and the things that are known and we've seen. At the same time, he was such an integral figure in the last 40 years of this business. And I do wonder, whatever his faculties are at this point, how he thinks about it going on without him. And, you know, this is the first Hall of Fame that Vince doesn't have his fingerprints on. It's the first WrestleMania that he doesn't have his fingerprints on in terms of any kind of direct decision-making. So it's an interesting transition period.
Yeah, and I'm really liking the little production touches, like even the sit-down in-ring interview with Michael Cole and Cody, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but just the presentation of it. That's something that they wouldn't have done before, I don't think, where they would have probably just had Cody just standing up there. And I thought that brought a little bit to it. And it was, you know, a different touch and, yeah, added to it. Definitely.
Definitely want to talk about that Cody segment tonight with Michael Cole, a lot to dig into there. Well, anyway, the other voice you hear there, the person I refer to as Darren, is Darren Lilly, the co-host of today's show. He covers, his kind of beat is covering Impact Wrestling for pwtorch.com with TV and pay-per-view reports and also a VIP exclusive podcast with John Laszlo. Darren, welcome back to the co-host chair. Always great talking Raw with you.
Well, thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking about Raw tonight.
Sounds good. Our phone number, if you want to join us, if you're live streaming our show at wadekellerpostshow.com, that's wadekellerpostshow.com, or even better, you don't have to navigate to the live link. If you just click on the direct link in my TV reports, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and some Saturdays for Collision after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision. In my TV reports at pwtorch.com at the top and bottom, there is a direct link to the live stream. You can join us. We go live about 5 minutes after the shows end and talk for an hour, hour and a half or so with callers, emails, sometimes on-site correspondents, and always a host and a co-host analyzing the show that just ended. And if you are live streaming us, thank you, and give us a call, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That's 347-215-8558. And push 1 if you want to be on the show. Many of you just call and listen, and that's totally fine. It's easier than for you than streaming it through a browser. And so many of you do that too. And but at any point, if you are listening in and you want to join the conversation, push 1. Our email is another way you can participate in the show, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller, I just said it wrong, WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com, not at pwtorch. That's WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. We switched to Gmail. It's just a little bit more reliable than our own server was. So take note of that. And if you've been sending to @pwtorch, don't let it autofill. Switch to Gmail. All right. So, yeah, so we've got definitely some other things to talk about, including that Becky Lynch, Rhea Ripley segment, the Cody Rhodes promo, and more WrestleMania developments. But first, we will begin with area code 409. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
What's up, Wade? What's up, Darren? This is Freddie P. from, well, I'm from Texas, but I'm in L.A. now.
Freddie, good to hear from you. Were you able to watch Raw live tonight?
I actually was able to watch Raw tonight, and I thought it was lit.
Cool. Yeah, what do you want to talk about regarding it?
Yeah, well, just a few things. Well, maybe like three things. So I like Pat McAfee, but the Telestrator thing has got to go. Like that, I don't know what's going on with that. Like, you know, they could have at least had a split screen when, you know, Bronson Reed, you know, was about, you know, was doing his thing and the match was already over and, you know, the Gauntlet match is continuing. And he's playing with the thing on the camera. It was a total distraction. And then also too, you know, I'm a big Jey Uso fan, you know. And, you know, he's doing the yeet thing, and I love it. You know, I'm up, I'm at home, I'm doing, you know, the hands and all. Like, I'm like, let's go, you know. But him standing on the desk doing it is like, damn, bro, can you just sit down and do it? just let him be in the ring, do his thing. So, I like the dude, but I just think he just needs to tone it down a little bit. Just tone it down a little bit, you know, because, you know, the wrestlers in the ring are like the ultimate show. So that was cool. So if he could tone that down, that would make the show better, you know, but it is what it is on that part. Two things. One, just a little commentary on Cody Rhodes, and two, a little question on Seth Rollins. Cody Rhodes, to me, is like a company rehire who came in with pomp and circumstance with all the swag on the outside, but when he clocks in, he's got that blue-collar work ethic. And, you know, he had his shot at the promotion, and he came up short because of politics, you know, and now he's earned his right, you know, the second time around at that top promotion, and he's got an even larger following, and now it's, you know, it's his to lose. And I think I really think the different parts of his personality, like a couple of weeks ago when he damn near took my brother out with the chair to the head, I thought the dude was dead almost. You know, he's got that mean streak. He's got that mean streak in him. You know, he slapped the crap out of The Rock on Friday. You know, he's got that. But then, you know, today too, I might be in the minority. It'll be interesting to see. But today too, you know, he's got this sort of emotional investment side. You know, which is, you know, I'm doing it, you know, for my wife. I'm doing it for, you know, the fans and stuff like that. And I think that's the reason why I'm a big Cody Rhodes fan. That's, you know, I enjoy the different parts of his personality. And, two, I thought the promo tonight came off kind of unscripted. Of course, they probably scripted it, but it just came off like, you know, he was just speaking from the heart, you know. And that's the reason why I really, 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 really hope he wins at WrestleMania. I was there last year, and I thought he should have won last year, you know, but, you know, whatever, so we're here again. I probably don't need to hear too much about the wrestling podcast. Okay, he could have left that part out, you know, like, to me, that's
I wasn't quite sure what that was all about.
Yeah, that was kind of, breaking the fourth wall, I guess, you know, sort of, I guess, you know, the wrestling community online. Whatever, bro. Just leave all that out. Like, I mean, you are now, you know, you are that dude. You know, you've been hungry. You've been loyal. You know, you're ready to lead the company. You know, like laser-like focus is what I like to see. You know, so I'm hook, line, and sinker. I'm with you. I just bought a Cody Rhodes T-shirt last week. You know, such a long time since I bought something online. So let's go. Like, I don't want to hear about, you know, wrestling commentators online, and bro, you got Roman Reigns and you got the whole bloodline, you know, in front of you. So, you know, maybe not every, you know, little thing was perfect, but once again, those little quirky parts of his personality, to me, work, and it came off kind of unscripted, which I like. And yeah, he might have made some mistakes with the podcast, the comment, but you know, if he's speaking from his heart and he stays in that vein, I think he'll win at WrestleMania. So I'm really curious to see how other people thought that promo came off. But that's that. Wade and Darren, what the hell is going on with Seth Rollins in the second part? Like, I mean, before the freaking Cody Rhodes shirt I bought, you know, last week, Seth Rollins was the only other shirt that I've had, you know, in my wardrobe. WWE, huge. Like, this dude is, like, in my opinion, damn near the second coming of Shawn Michaels, who's my one of my all-time favorites, you know? Like, okay, here we go. And I was there, you know, what is this, almost, what, 9 years ago, you know, when he stole the spotlight, you know, from Roman Reigns, when everyone's ready to riot if Roman Reigns actually won, you know, and he runs down there, and I think it was Santa Clara, I believe, you know, and then he cashes in, and, I mean, we just went freaking nuts. Like, that sort of, you know, just, you know, a mastermind, rebellious kind of spirit, like, edgy, like, let's go. I remember, I think it was you, Wade, with Stone Cold, I want to say, and, you know, I think Stone Cold was saying something about, you know, he didn't know who Seth Rollins was. So maybe it was one of those interviews, you know, which is a good point. Like, the character could be more defined.
What is freaking Seth Rollins? What exactly is freaking
yeah.
Seth Rollins?
Yeah. But to me, at least, you know, someone who's really followed him, you know, we've all followed him pretty hardcore, but I guess I should say from my perspective, you know, he is that, you know, he's the architect, right? He's the guy who knows it all. And sometimes that comes to bite him in the ass, you know, but at the end of the day, his hunger, his will to want to be on top always supersedes everything else, you know, and sometimes it's his downfall and sometimes it gets him the win. What the hell has happened to that? He comes out, you know, with the outfits, you know, Rock nailed it with the walking emoji thing, you know, and he's singing and it's like, bro, it's so cringe. And then he gets in the ring. Drew McIntyre is off to a freaking hot promo, like an incredible start to Raw. Like, you know, the fans are like, what? He's like, say what again? You know, whatever he said, like, because I took CM Punk out. Whatever he said, it was very clever, you know, the way he responded to, you know, stop the what chant. And it's like, I'm like ready for it. And then Seth Rollins comes out and he's like, no, the song's going to wait for later. And then the promo is all over the place. And then he ends it by saying, well, Drew, you're actually at the bottom of my concerns, below The Rock and my broken back. I'm like, bro, you're the world champion. What the hell are you talking about? Like, how is Drew McIntyre at the bottom of your worries? Even if that does play into your character, it makes me as a fan less invested in wanting to see the whole match. So my question, thank you guys for listening, is how can Seth Rollins pivot? How can he salvage whatever this character is to make it believable, to make it more believable, you know, and make us want to tune in for WrestleMania? So thanks. I'll just listen, guys. Appreciate you.
Great. Wow. That was there might not have been a paragraph break in there, but a lot of good opinions and passion. Darren, I was like, oh, I can keep track of things I want to bring up. I can keep track of that, too. I can keep track of that, too. And then we kept going. I think we can cover a lot of what Freddie brought up. So first, just Pat McAfee. Telestrator's not doing anything for me. But he's been, I guess, less obnoxious. There's been an absence of irritants with him more so than the first couple weeks back. But when they go to him at ringside and he's interacting with Cole, he doesn't have a lot to add. Like, I just think what's happened is Wade Barrett and Corey Graves have been superior color commentators, much more plugged into the product, much more plugged into how WWE wants storylines enhanced with analysis. And McAfee just seems kind of lost out there. There's half of him just going, I'm going to spout out some random opinion. And then the other half is like, oh, I shouldn't stray too much from what they want me to say, but I don't really know what they want me to say. That's the vibe I get, and I don't think he's really adding much of anything other than sort of the cult of personality enthusiasm and you know, standing on the desk and waving his arms, but he's been a downgrade, and I think he was better. I'd have to go back and watch, but I think he was better. I don't think he's just worn out his novelty with me. I think he was more into the product and better on SmackDown originally, and I think he's weaker now. What do you think of what I had to say and what Freddie had to say about him?
First of all, Freddie brought up a lot of great points. And what you just said about McAfee echoed the exact thoughts I had when I was sitting there watching. He's not bringing anything to the broadcast. I found him less annoying this week than in prior week, so it's toned down, but he's adding zero, and I just wondered if that was me being biased, but he's not bringing anything to the broadcast, and then they kind of force him in, like the telestrator thing is just very clunky and forced, and it's like, okay, we can end this now, we get the point. It's just like, well, we're paying this guy a ton of money probably, so we got to feature him in some respect. So let's shoehorn this thing in, I guess. And it really doesn't add to the broadcast. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're very funny, I guess. And he takes away, I pointed this out last time I was here, that he takes away from the Jey Uso act. Just as Freddie pointed out, it's like he's got to make it about him. Whereas if he just sat there and did it, it would be better. But him standing up on the table and being obnoxious and having to work in yeet just takes any kind of cool factor away from it. So I think they've got something that they need to address there, because he's just not bringing anything to the table. I'm like, is this the same guy that everybody makes a big deal about signing with ESPN? Because it seems like two different people.
It feels like he lost 20 IQ points. That's his announcing, you know, like I'm not, you know, on a personal level, I'm, you know, he's probably the same person. I don't know. But what he brings to WWE, his analysis, his insight, his ability to just have the instinct to know what needs to be said and play off of Michael Cole and stuff. And I don't know, you know, I mean, maybe things have gone to his head. Maybe he's too busy. Maybe who knows what's going on. But it feels like the color commentary is 20 points lower IQ-wise. Some would say he didn't have that far to fall. But I think he did. Maybe 15. Maybe we can compromise at 15. So anyway, so Cody, stellar promo. I know it's not for everybody when he, you know, starts crying, and loses it, but it, wrestling fans, I really believe that a big, big chunk of wrestling fans, when pro wrestling is drawing huge mainstream audience, it's not just kind of a core, you know, a smaller core audience of people who can, you know, list off their top eight Okada matches. And you know, Excalibur teaches them nothing because they know it all. Not that group, but the large, and some of them included, but beyond, way beyond that, WWE is drawing right now. And having a babyface who, and I said this about Roman Reigns never cut that go-home promo, babyface promo that I grew up watching, and I've seen all the top babyfaces do, and people said, oh, it's a different era, and you know, it's not needed. And I'm like, fans are going to boo somebody if they feel like they're sort of there to go through the motions, do what they're told and get rich and collect a paycheck. And Roman, in essence, said that in some interviews, that that's what he was there to do. And he wasn't, and this was another phrase I used years ago during his babyface run when he was being rejected by so many of the male fans, most of the male fans, is he wasn't emotionally accessible. And that's sort of a phrase that, you know, triggers some people like, well, that sounds whatever. But he wasn't. He just went out there and he had his vest on and he cut his promo and he just seemed like he was acting like he was too cool to ask for the fan support, because look at y'all and look at me. You should be worshiping me. That's the vibe he gave off. Or as people said, you know, 2 out of 3 weeks on the show, he was a douche. He's a douchebag. He came across that way. Cody doesn't. Cody opens his heart up to the fans, and this means the world to him. And when he talks about his dad and what his dad accomplished and then what his dad didn't accomplish, you feel like you would be shocked if there was like some hot mic moment with Cody where he says, I can't believe the fans buy all this BS and think I care about this stuff. Nobody believes for a second he says that, even in the most private moments in his life. Like, I think people believe this means everything to him, and I think people believe the fan support means everything to him. He said on Friday on SmackDown, everyone, like, pause, like, Seth and Rock and Roman, and like, look around. This is special. This is a hot product. These fans are packing these buildings. I think he's seen so much, and he talks about it. He talks about his dad being at the top and then, like you said, having 40 people waiting in line for him for an autograph. So I just think Cody feels real, and I think he feels authentic. And even if he seems a little dorky or overly emotional for a couple people here and there. The crowds are not wavering, Darren. They like Cody. And I thought tonight it was a great response to all the different moving pieces in terms of his situation and the stipulation of the match. And the tag match has been such a big part of the conversation, but this brought things back to Cody's story and the one-on-one match with Roman being the true main event of WrestleMania, no matter how big that tag match is. So those are some of my thoughts in response to what Freddie had to say. Darren, take it away.
Yeah, it goes back to one of his strengths is just he just appears to be genuine, and not everyone can pull that off, and I think that's why he's separating himself from the pack. He shows good range, like when he fired up and slapped the Rock, but then also he can start tearing up when he was talking about his mother, and I thought it might have been a tad over the top, but because
he is over the top. I mean, that's part of him. That's part of his charm. I mean, he wears suits when he goes to Walgreens to buy some Advil. You know,
I would imagine he does.
I don't know that for a fact, but I suspect that's true.
Oh, I certainly suspect that.
Honey, I'm going to Walgreens. Hang on, I got to get my tie. I got to pick up my tie.
Right. Vest and everything. but, yeah, he's so over. And he can get away with the kind of crying and stuff where some people couldn't because people actually believe it. And that's just one of his biggest takeaways. Whereas, and I think we're leading towards this, the Seth character comes out as just a complete clown that it's just kind of, for lack of a better term, just like a buffoon. And, like, no one's invested in that and the cackling and all that. Like, tonight he came out, and then he wants to turn around and get serious at the end of the promo. And it's just so – the character's so inconsistent with the cartoonish part of it just not being believable. I think that's what turns away a certain – part of the fans, and myself included, just the inconsistency and trying to get serious at the end. It's like, I don't necessarily buy it. So he needs to take some cues from Cody.
We got a Brandy mention, so that, you know, she picked him out when he's wearing a mask and getting RKO'd all left and right. And he hasn't brought her up a lot. The podcast thing was kind of weird, but I mean, Seth right now, he does seem to have two personalities. You know, there's the ha-ha-ha that Drew made fun of, and then there's the guy who it wants, as Drew talked about, you know, he wants his title, or as Cole talked about, he wants his title to be the most important title. What did you elaborate on and talk about Cole planting this seed? He's such a troublemaker. Planting a seed that maybe Seth wants to be the guy to end Roman's reign because he's the last guy to beat him. I love that he talked about it being, albeit a DQ, but nevertheless, and he didn't get a rematch since that DQ win. So he's planting the seed. You know, Seth isn't maybe altruistic when it comes to Cody's journey. And you know, do you have that to worry about? I thought that was a, you know, so we talk about all the weeks they have between the matches being announced in WrestleMania. There's these little things they can throw in to create a conversation piece and something for people to react to. I liked that happened. I also liked, Cody's response saying people change. Cole, you were behind plexiglass yelling at, you know, insulting the wrestlers and all that. I mean, they're calling on their history to add credibility, context, relevance to some of their points of view and stories. Darren.
Yeah, it was multiple benefits to bringing that up. One, they could just be outright planting the seeds for a turn, for all we know. But it also, they've got 3 more weeks. They got 6 hours of programming to fill before WrestleMania, so that brings up a great talking point when you have them out there. There's only so much you can say about this whole situation. That brings up an excellent talking point and adds some intrigue to what's going to happen. You have to talk about that history because they had a very intense feud, I guess it was last year, and you can't pretend that didn't happen, that they just put everything behind them and now they're this solid team. You have to sow those seeds, like, hey, it's realistic. You know, there's still some bad blood, and Seth hasn't always been a great guy. All of a sudden he's changed, so it's something you need to be careful about. So on many levels it works.
All right. He brought up Drew. Drew's just amazing right now. Like, if you'd say, oh, yeah, there's going to be this match on night one, and then there's going to be that match on night two, and, oh, yeah, Drew and Seth are fighting for the title. It was supposed to be CM Punk against Seth, and Drew's going to be doing something different. You'd be like, okay, they're lost in the mix. Drew just has found this way, and he's getting, like, incrementally more unlikable. but also true to his point of view that he's made clear to us, which is he doesn't see himself as the bad guy. I just thought this was another really, really good week for him. Yeah, Darren, just talk about him, and then I'll bring up some things that I liked about it too.
Yeah, from my notes, it's just the nuances that he does so well. Like the eye rolls were just right, perfect.
Yep.
When the fans are starting to get on his case, it wasn't over the top. It was just enough, and then the improvising, because you didn't know they were gonna start. I think they were chanting CM Punk or whatever, and he came right back with a retort, and it shut them right up. Just that stuff is—he's just in the zone. And it's just a joy to see him. He started off the show, on a great note, and he is just in the zone. He's gonna be—I don't know—he might be when they finish all this Rock Roman stuff. He might be the centerpiece guy, and it's a joy to see.
I think my favorite line of the night was when he says, before this gets any weirder, I just want to talk to you. Like when Drew says, like, just, you know, you give me the claymore, and he kneeled down and stuck his shit out. And Drew's like, what? And then he turned his back and stuck his arms out. And Drew's like, I just want to talk to you. Like, it was
great.
It was so good. And yeah, if WWE loses like four of their top stars to injury and Drew's the last guy standing, and I mean, you're still in good shape. You can build around this character right now. I didn't mind Seth saying that Drew is last on his priority list over being concerned about his knee and the bloodline. Seth has made it clear he thinks the bloodline is bigger than the title because if the bloodline aren't running things, you know, it just – title doesn't matter. It might not have relevance. It might not exist if the bloodline have control. They might just eliminate it. And I think it's believable, but I think fans see it not as Seth underestimating Drew as a threat, but more it's probably true, but that doesn't mean Seth isn't taking him seriously. But also he just says it because he wants to get under Drew's skin. Did you have any issue with that?
No, I didn't like the part about Drew walking away, but I guess that plays into the character, and him being low on the priority list is just Seth being a jerk. So no, but as much as Drew has done to rebuild this title and make it still seem important with everything that's going on, is to his credit, and I don't think that tarnished it any.
Do you think there's anything we missed from Freddie's?
No, actually, I was taking notes while he was talking, but those were the main takeaways that he referenced.
All right, let's go to Andy in Houston, Texas next. Andy, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Not much. I'm actually driving home from the live event, so I was there.
I was wondering. Awesome. Well, I can start a few places, but I guess I'll just start with Cody. Was there anyone close in terms of crowd response to him? Rhea Ripley crosses my mind, maybe Sammy during the peak of the main event, but talk about the top crowd reactions in terms of fan favorites.
Rhea Ripley was definitely like on par with Cody Rhodes. I don't think anyone else came close.
Wow.
It was funny because, you know, people were kind of torn between Becky and Liv during their match, and as Liv just kept pulling out new spots and impressing the crowd, people got more and more behind her, and Becky just kind of deflated in terms of her appeal. And then she wins, and people are, you know, like, oh, that was a good match. And then suddenly Rhea's music hit, and the stadium just exploded. So... I would say that Rhea has surpassed Becky's popularity when it comes to the women wrestlers. I mean, I would put her on Becky's level from, you know, when she was in her triple threat against Charlotte and Ronda Rousey, which I'm very happy for because I've been a Rhea supporter since the Mae Young Classic.
Darren, what do you think is going on with Becky? Because I don't see anything wrong with what Becky's doing, but you can see her just listening to the crowd. And I mean, she's out there having a kind of a banger with Liv Morgan. Has anyone ever said that about a Liv match? And then, you know, there's an intensity afterwards, but they you know, show signs of respect backstage. Nia Jax attacks her, throws her through a table. She's like, I want her in a Last Woman Standing match. I probably shouldn't be doing this so soon before Mania. I feel like she's doing everything right, and yet is it just fans don't want Becky to keep Rhea from getting ascending to the top spot? Is it just that, or is Becky doing something wrong, or is she doing everything right, but she's kind of yesterday's news to fans who want the new bright, you know, the new shiny toy? What's going on?
I think it's more that Rhea is the one that has is on the upswing now, and people want to get behind that movement, whereas Becky has been there. It's not that she's doing anything wrong. It's that she doesn't have that momentum now. She's the established brand, I guess you could say. She's been there. She's done everything. That's the kind of problem, and doesn't really have any new challenges. Sure, you had the Nia Jax thing, but that isn't necessarily fresh by any means. But Rhea's just really taking the place by storm, and then coming off of the Australia thing just took her to a new level, I think. So yeah, I did reference, you know, that they don't want Becky stopping her momentum. I don't think they want that. I think they want to see Rhea complete her journey and probably turn babyface and take on some new opponents, and they would hate to see Becky stepping in. Not that they have anything against her, but she's just in the wrong place at the wrong time right now.
Indy, talk more about anything in terms of crowd responses, perhaps including the ebb and flow of that Intercontinental Gauntlet match. Did they hold fans' attention? It seemed like certainly the last segment with Gable and Sammy, they were into it, but tell me what it was like in the building.
I want to come back to Rhea in a second, but for the Gauntlet match, it was really well-paced. I was actually wondering if Gable was in a position to win, and that everybody would get to see him deadlift Bronson Reed into a German suplex, which I think that would have made the crowd explode at a Cody or Rhea level. But sadly, we didn't get to see that. All the stuff with Ricochet and JD McDonagh was really impressive. I love Bronson going up to the top and doing the splash, because that just looks vicious, like, you know, going back to the times of Vader with that. And then Shinsuke was kind of there and served a purpose in the middle, but it really boiled down to Sami Zayn and Chad Gable, and I was really pulling for Gable because I just have wanted him to ascend for so long, because he is Kurt Angle's son. That is how I would put it. You know, he should have always been Kurt Angle's son, and just,
yep,
everything about him is Kurt Angle, basically.
I agree. Darren, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, if they can get him out of the comedy, I think he's shown enough that he's someone that could be a major player if you present him in the correct way. And I think even tonight helped his case for that.
Yeah, I think there's an intangible angle had that Gable doesn't. I think Gable is his son in, you know, all the ways that you're talking about. But I just don't think he quite crossed that line for me into when he was given the chance over the last year to show he could be compelling, interesting, and serious. And I think Angle could be. Like, to me, Angle was somebody who was hurt because how good his drawing ability as a top guy was hurt based on how much comedy he was good at and how much they leaned on that. Where with Gable, I think if you strip away the comedy, there isn't a top guy there. And so I think he did really well in the build for this match, but I still wasn't quite buying it. But I like him in just that, you know, Danny Garcia in AEW type role. Just like, you know, you're going to get a good match. He's likable. But, you know, he can be a bit of a gatekeeper. I don't know if he's going to go beyond that, and that there's no harm in that. He's in a great spot. I loved him going back to the Jason Jordan team and their joy of performance in NXT. You know, he's had this joy of performance to him over the years that I think fans really, really like. Andy, back to you.
Yeah, I agree with you, and you're right. He doesn't necessarily have the same intangible that Angle did, but I just see enough similarities between the two that it seems like you could find the right way to package him as the second coming of Angle, you know, if Triple H really wanted to. I did want to circle back to Rhea Ripley really quick. Y'all were talking about how, you know, people are really behind her now and getting, you know, they want to be a part of the ride for her rise to the top. And it seems like all the qualities that she has right now has been there for years. And I remember when she had the championship match against Charlotte after Charlotte won the Royal Rumble. And, you know, she should have been popular then, but not nearly as popular as now. But it seems like once she joined the Judgment Day, she developed a presence there. Like when you juxtapose the, you know, against Finn Balor and Damian Priest and Dirty Dom, that just that presence that she developed with them, I think, is really what catapulted her popularity, especially the way that you could see her sort of as the dominant personality over all these other alpha personalities and Dom.
Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that certainly helped, and being able to play off of their personalities, then the heat that people gave Dominic Mysterio, certainly that helped on her path and kind of put her over the top. And it just the fact that she was in a prominent position and kind of got her out of the women's division and to segue with a main focus of the men's division, and with her kind of leading the group, they never came out right and said it, but at times she looked to be the leader. I think that helped as well.
Yeah, you described it. I mean, there's something about her that went from the stage being bigger than she was ready for at first to having this alpha quality where, I mean, I don't think Damian Priest and Finn Balor come across as like subservient and small in her presence, but she matches them and often exceeds them in terms of what she's asked to do, but also how she delivers it. She's right before our very eyes turning into a real big star for them. And you got to be part of a sold out crowd in a major, major arena reacting to her that way. And you experienced it. I mean, it's for real, and, you know, it comes across that way on TV, but I'm sure it got underlined and validated for you, Andy, tonight.
Oh, definitely. And I think the big thing, like what probably marks that contrast when she's in Judgment Day is that when she speaks, they're not dismissive like you've seen in during the Vince regime for the past 30 years. They actually listen to her. And I think that goes a long way in how people perceive her. That's just a big deal to me.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That's a really good point. How people react to you on camera helps, like, validate what you're coming across as. It amplifies it. Absolutely good point, Eddie. Anyway, is there anything on the was there anything off air before or after Raw that you want to pass along?
The only other two big things I would note is during the after Ricochet's entrance, when they went to a commercial break, they were doing everybody showing their signs. I don't know if they actually picked the winner for best sign, but there were so many yeet signs it kind of made me want to puke, but. The two best ones were one where somebody had like a poop emoji with The Rock's face on it, and it said Diarrhea Dwayne, and another one where somebody took a screen capture of of Cody giving his receipt to The Rock, and it just had LOL in a caption. So you just see him in the midst of a slap. So that was a fun one to see. The other thing, Kabuki Warriors just have so much charisma and energy. I think they are grossly miscast as heels. That was a great match between Starks and Baszler versus the Kabuki Warriors, but nobody was really cheering or booing. It was just so flat because everybody is not properly cast to where you can be behind one group over the other. And then the last thing, I do want to apologize on behalf of the city of Houston for all the stupid-ass "We Want Tables" chants. Oh, my God. Could y'all hear that on TV?
I didn't really hear.
It didn't come across worse than usual, to be honest. When was it? When were they mostly concentrated?
There were about four different "We Want Tables" chants. There was one during the each women's match. There was one in the gauntlet, and then there was one other. I just can't pinpoint what it was. But it was littered throughout, and just any time they got near an announce table, people would chant, "We want tables." And it's like people want to harken back to the Attitude Era days where announce tables were constantly broken.
I thought, you know, speaking of crowds, Drew's comment, which is, you know, say what if you are happy I punked out Punk, or, you know, took out Punk. Did that, like, talk about being in the building for that. Did that work? It seemed like it worked.
I want to say whatever Drew said, I had a hard time hearing him where I was sitting. The echoes were just keeping me from fully being able to hear what he had to say. But he had complete control over the crowd. So they didn't want him to death. And he managed to get them exactly where he wanted to be. I am just, whatever WWE needs to do to get Drew re-signed, they need to do it, because he has demonstrated with, you know, very clearly that he is a major player. You know, whether you have him as a centerpiece or not, he should be circling the main event at all times. I look forward more to a healthy CM Punk versus Drew main event at next year's WrestleMania than I do Cody and Roman. So that's just my perspective on Drew and everything he's touched so far.
Yeah, yeah. How did the crowd react to Maxine Dupri, if at all, in any noteworthy way?
Was she on the show? I don't know if I don't know if I was on a break during that. Like I missed the whatever that was on the pre-show, so that couldn't be what you were talking about. But I think I must have had a food break at the time that Maxine was on the show, because I have no recollection of her at all.
Darren, can you confirm she was on the show for me?
Yeah, it was Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell did a tag team match against her and Ivy Nile, and they kind of did an angle where Candice is turning heel and was saying some very mean things to...
Very mean.
Yes, to play off of, I guess, this. They had a viral moment where someone had booed Maxine at a WWE live event, and some of the wrestlers came to her defense, and I guess they're playing off of that in real life now.
Yeah, yeah.
That must have been my bathroom break moment. So sure. I missed that entire segment. Wow.
That's totally fine. Yeah, I don't know how much the crowd would have picked up on what Candice was saying. That was, you know, picked up by the microphone up close. Darren, do you want to ask anything in particular?
Just a quick question. How did the fans react to The Rock when they showed him on the video package? What kind of reaction did he get?
There was no negative reaction to The Rock when they showed him. But when Cody mentions The Rock, they break into a Rocky Sucks chant. So he is in a very weird Schrodinger's face situation because people want to cheer him, and they're only going to boo him in the context of, like, the people he faces off of, like Cody and Seth. And by the way, Seth, I feel like if he didn't have the song, I don't know what he would be. He's really nothing without that song, which is why I'm very hopeful that Drew just takes the title from him night two.
He needs a new personality. Yeah, he's been trying on different ones, and this is one that's brought him the most crowd reaction. But you are not alone, Andy, in thinking if you strip that away, you know what is left. You know the bombast and extroverted, you know, over the top outfits and stuff and mannerisms, and maybe that's enough. You know, maybe that's enough for him to get by because nothing else really fully worked for him in the WWE environment in terms of just being that distinct personality. You know. Darren, you want to comment on that at all?
No, I've kind of talked about this thing a lot. Yeah.
Was there a just total down point in the show that you saw, Andy, where the crowd just wasn't into it?
No, not really. I mean, it was a full sold-out crowd for sure. You know, a marked contrast from their competitors. And aside from people just taking breaks, since it was a 3-hour live show, people were just drawn to the whole thing. Like I said, the Kabuki Warrior tag match, it was flat in the beginning. And I think that, like I said, that's just because of the miscast of the whole situation. But I didn't get a feeling that people were disinterested in that tag match so much as they didn't have a clear guide for how to feel about the participants.
After Sammy won, the show went off the air after Gunther stepped out. How did Sammy play the crowd? What happened with Gunther? How long did it last? Did anything happen after that?
Okay, so from where I was sitting, I couldn't see Gunther. I just saw the large LCD Titan Tron, whatever they call it these days. But when they went off the air, Sammy asked him to cut off that awful music. Everyone cheered. And he just basically waxed positive about the noise in Houston and just how much of a loud crowd that we are. So I guess every time the WWE comes to Houston, it is definitely a big deal for us as wrestling fans down in Texas. So I'm glad that Sammy acknowledged that he and the guys in the back really enjoy being down here. We need another pay-per-view. Give us WrestleMania 42 or 43. Just give us something.
Anything else, Andy, you want to share at all?
No, I'm glad you guys gave me all this time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll have others in the queue that can lend their opinions.
Well, I appreciate it, Andy. I'm glad that you called on your way home from the arena. How long did you drive?
Yeah, the Toyota Center.
Yeah.
The Toyota Center. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. All right. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you
sure.
all again.
Good night.
Yep, you too. Good stuff from Andy there. Did a great job. Okay. I want to jump to some emails here, although you're still welcome to give us a call. 347-215-8558. Push 1 if you want to respond to anything we've said so far. We'll start emails here with, we'll go with Effie, who says, when they showed Rhea with Buddy Murphy at UFC, why don't they mention it that former WWE superstar Buddy Murphy, or insert, quote, superstar. I understand he's in AW now, but they don't have to say his AW name. How about seeing if his name in that picture sparked my interest to watch some old Buddy matches on Peacock? I don't think they want to draw attention to Rhea's real life. That doesn't fit whatever they're doing on TV, Darren.
Right, yeah, because they had the whole Dom thing, so they probably don't want to draw attention to it in that respect, I suppose, and just avoid any kind of controversy of mentioning AEW. So I guess I kind of understand it, but I don't think people would care that much. I mean, sure, just acknowledge it, but for whatever reason, they don't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think if he wasn't in AEW, they still might not, honestly. But he says, it doesn't matter about the person, or if they want to be sports-like, the NBA does it all the time. If a Euro player joins the NWA or NBA, they will talk about their Euro League accomplishments because they know they are a top league in the world and not worried about Euro League overtaking them. Do you think they should start mentioning previous talent or continue business how they have been and act like they never existed? Good night, Wade. Talk soon. If it doesn't benefit, I guess he's arguing it benefits because it's just like treating the fans with respect that you're acknowledging. Real life, but like, I don't think it's helped Becky or Seth, to be honest, that they acknowledged in the canon of Raw and SmackDown that they're together and had a kid together. I don't think it helps either of their characters. I am of the belief that real life is something you inject if it helps, and it's something you ignore if it doesn't, or even if it's neutral and just extraneous. I think if you can base a storyline on TV on reality, but you're not doing it because it's real. You're doing it because it's the best of all available options, because being real gives it a little extra boost, you think? I mean, that's fine, but I just won't go around looking to do that. TV time is precious, and everything they talk about, I get the philosophy of what we do is building our personalities and our matches, and within our canon, some things are worth saying and some things aren't. And I don't think there should be a rule, or they should even be looked down upon for not, you know, digging into the bios. I don't think that was true in 1980. I don't think it was true in 90. And in the internet era, I mean, people already had that info. So, you know, I just don't think you need to.
True. But I also agree that it adds some credibility that they can, and it just shows that they're not as uptight as they used to be. And I think there's some benefit to that. Like, they acknowledge, yes, Sting retired last week.
Right.
It's a nice thing to do. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. You don't have to be so uptight about it. People know Sting exists and that he retired. Go ahead and acknowledge it. They've noted that Chris Jericho was one of the Intercontinental Champions or something a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and mention that. Sure. I mean, people aren't just going to go scrambling to turn the channel or anything. Acknowledge that. Respect the fans. So, you don't have to beat people over the head with it, but when the opportunity comes up, just show that, yes, we respect. We know that, you know, they're not here anymore, but it's not going to hurt them. I mean, they're making money hand over fist. Not like the operation's going to stop because you mentioned that Cody Rhodes was in AEW.
Right. I thought that was interesting. He speaking of Cody, he mentioned the throne, and that person who sat on that throne is now one of his top advocates behind the scenes. And, you know, that he's changed. You know, I think this plays to your point. I think Cody fans bond with Cody in part because he does seem to be willing to allude to and reference things, even if he doesn't say AEW or Tony Khan or something like that. He's you know, letting the audience know this is a key part of his journey and part of his character. And one of the reasons they like him is he went out on his own and did something, and then, you know, as the story is told, came back home.
Right, and he even did the Too Sweet thing when he was pointing to the WrestleMania signs tonight. So just adds that, yeah, I'm a genuine person. I don't just forget my friends just because I have a new job.
Yeah. The Sting thing I think they mentioned because Sting's done with AEW. So, you know, I don't think they like I don't think they like Pat McAfee saying, that was a great match, because you know, now you're having people seek out a match. I think they would have been happy with people thinking Sting, you know, announced his retirement via press release or on social media. They didn't need McAfee drawing attention to the match. Again, you know, why put money in the pocket of your competition? All right. Up next, David says, just curious on your thoughts regarding the build to Io versus Bayley. I was really hoping that Io would be showcased as a main event performer, as she should, but it seems like she is not the main story in this feud. It feels like this is more Dakota Bayley with Io as a side attraction. I'm hoping they can heat this up for Io because I know she could steal the show. Just curious as to what you think. You know, right now they're telling the the Bailey Dakota story. And Dakota is the agitator and the heat generator and the bombastic English-speaking fluent personality to get under Bailey's skin. Io is, you know, obviously mega talented, but I don't think they want to necessarily emphasize how exciting and mega talented she is since she is a heel. They want to get heat on her. But I think body language-wise, they're so obnoxious when they walk in that. They show them walking in the building. Like, they are so the group you just want to see fail. And so, again, Io's in a spot where the machine shouldn't get behind her promoting how good she is. She should show how good she is, and people see that. But, I mean, it should be personal, and Bailey should want that title. But I don't know. Darren, what do you think? Do you think they should be doing anything different at this stage, or do you think there's still time for it, and what do you think they'll do?
I still think they have plenty of time. They're building up a big match between Bailey and Dakota this week on SmackDown, and I think after that, then you'll start making EO more of a focus of it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's plenty of time to tell that story. You don't want to burn that one out, because when they did the big angle, there was still plenty of time. So go ahead and do it after this, whatever they do on Friday. And even though they are very obnoxious and stuff backstage and that kind of thing, when they do turn face, I think that they're going to take it to the next level. Kind of referenced what our previous caller, Andy, said, that they're miscast, and they are to a degree, but I think they do well as heels being obnoxious like that. But when they make that turn, I think that's a group that can really take off.
Yes. All right. Up next, Henderson from Charlotte says, McTee Dupree's acting was up there or down there with a State of the Union rebuttal lady. I'm fine with them making a story out of this, but they need an acting coach to go over her reactions in the corner when she was getting chewed out. Yeah, so do you have any take on Maxine and the fact that they have her on TV and now they're turning it into a story that fans have said she's, you know, in overhead and shouldn't be in the ring and not ready for this, which I don't know if that makes the fans heels. The way they deliver the message can, but that statement of fact, you know, doesn't. People are paying their money. There should be a certain baseline competency, you know, in terms of if you're ready to do what you're doing. And, you know, but her gimmick is she's incompetent. You know, her gimmick was, you know, can she do anything in the ring? That was how it all started. So anyway, yeah, her acting is very cartoonish. Again, it was sort of charming when you could argue it was charming when it was just like as a backstage sidekick. But now, does it stand out more, Darren?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they leaned into this and they're going to go with it as a storyline. And I guess that will help when she does eventually botch things, which she has done a couple times in matches, that it just plays into the storyline now. So from that respect, it kind of makes a little sense. But for a while when they were focusing on Alpha Academy, she was getting over to a degree. And I think if you add this sympathy angle, I think that helps to put her in a storyline. She's somebody that the fans were getting behind, and this will help, and it will allow the fans to be more patient and have a little more forgiveness when you make that part of the storyline. And, yeah, the acting will probably need to tighten up a little bit, but, you know, give her some more reps, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right, Henderson also says, the last thing, what role do you think CM Punk is going to play at Mania? WrestleMania host, commentator, possibly special referee. He has booked the last couple shows before so I'm assuming he'll be doing something. Thanks for all the great work. Thank you, Henderson. Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be pretty low-key at WrestleMania. You know, I maybe kickoff show panelist. I mean, it's possible. Like, to me, like Drew laughing and going, you should thank me because I'm keeping you relevant. I mean, there's something to that. Legit, you know, that you know, Drew's talking about him, and now he's, you know, going to show up in Chicago in 2 weeks and, you know, have something to say to Drew. But I don't think people want to see Drew or see Punk cost Drew the match against Seth. I mean, there's a lot of ways they can tell that story where maybe Seth is beat up from the tag match the night before and Drew is, you know, brutalizing him and Punk runs out after being on the kickoff show and says this is too much, he's going too far, and then he gets involved in some way. But so, I mean, that's a possibility. It's not going to be involved in any way other than Drew or a panel discussion. But to me, you can just say Punk for, you know, the day after Mania or 8 days after Mania. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't have him involved in any capacity as far as getting involved in storylines or anything like that. To just make him fresh when he comes back and just restart then. I would say I'm not even sure I'd have him on the panels or anything. I mean, it's relatively harmless, sure, but I definitely wouldn't have him involved in any storylines because he's going to be out for a significant amount of time, and you can't build to a match, so what's the point, really, of keeping all that going when he's not coming back till probably the end of the year, from what I understand. I would just keep him out, and then when he's ready to go, he'll be fresh. Somebody can insert in storylines, you can get the most out of him. I wonder what they're going to do in Chicago. Are they going to do an entry angle or something like that in his hometown, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. People will tune in to see. I mean, and maybe just shows up and just talks to the fans and makes Drew, and then yells at Drew a little bit for being such a jerk, and everyone agrees and cheers. I mean, it could, you know, sometimes just basic is fine, too.
True.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. JB in Detroit. We'll read this. Says, Drew is by far my favorite thing in wrestling right now, and it's not particularly close for me. Every promo he cuts is compelling. It makes sense. It furthers multiple current and potential storylines with intrigue. My second favorite thing in wrestling right now is Gunther and everything associated with him. At this point, I'm of the mindset that Gunther should win at Mania. I'm not convinced there's even one option of the gauntlet tonight who should get the win. It should be a Braun Breaker type who could really use the rub. On the opposite side of positive things with Drew and Gunther, I'm not sure that Seth has ever been as annoying to me as he is right now. Even when he's trying to be serious, the way he says things comes off as a walking clown emoji, as The Rock would say. Seth framing Drew as the ultimate hypocrite is a huge reach, and it seems to me the crowd was lukewarm when Seth brought it up. Drew may come across as a jerk, but I nod along to everything he says about Seth. The appeal with Seth is the fact that fans like to chant his entrance music at this point. Boy, I think I heard that recently. any comments on – I mean, we covered those three things already, but anything you want to add?
No, but, yeah, people are starting to catch on that it's the song that's keeping Seth so relevant. And I mean, and I tear him down, but, I mean, he's such an excellent wrestler. And if he would focus, I can't say it enough, on this serious side of it, he can be really good. But this is just – oh, the costuming is just too much and the obnoxious behavior. Yeah, and when he was trying to turn heel, I guess he had to do something. But he doesn't need it now. He doesn't even need it. So it's just – I mean, you would think that they would see that. He just brings those segments down to me. I mean, he did all right Friday because he was in serious mode, but he still came out in a ridiculous outfit, and that just takes it down a notch also. So if they could really focus on Seth, but he's probably just doing what he wants to do now at this point.
Yeah. All right. He says, is there any way that Liv Morgan gets interjected into the Rhea Becky match at Mania? I don't hate Liv. She certainly has her fans, but I'm not particularly high on her as a Mania co-main event level, and I do feel as if her presence would take away from the anticipation of a Rhea Beck one-on-one match, very similar to when Charlotte Flair was unnecessarily interjected into the Becky Ronda singles Mania match. What are they up to with her, Darren?
My guess is that she's going heel, and they're setting her up as a post-WrestleMania opponent for Rhea, since they used to be a tag team, and you can play into that storyline. But yeah, I was a little surprised that she got thrown into this. Again, you've got to fill time. You got 4 weeks to fill, so this is a good way to do it. But long term, I think she's showing some heel tendencies, and you've got to build up some challengers for Rhea at some point if she's keeping the title. And I think, as you saw in the ring tonight, she surprised a few people. I think she'd be a credible opponent.
All right, he says, even worse, would they consider a fatal four-way with Rhea, Becky, Liv, and Nia? I think the better option would be to keep Becky and Rhea in a singles match and just have an entirely separate match with Liv and Nia if someone is insistent on having them on the card. If they're going heel with Liv, I don't know that they can stretch it out that long to have her go against Nia as a heel and Liv as a face. If they did a four-way and Liv turned heel first, you would have Nia Jax and Liv as full-fledged heels, Rhea as a cheered heel, and Becky as a babyface who fans are largely ambivalent to, which is why four-way matches happen. It's when there isn't a one-on-one match that seems like it's going to click, and they just want to add more people to it and wedge them into the match for, you know, to get them on the show or to make up for a shortcoming. I vote for Rhea Becky one-on-one no matter what. Even if Becky gets a weak response, I think putting up a good fight and being a good sport about the fact that fans are more into Rhea in the long run can benefit Becky, and I think she's already done the heel bit, and I was, you know, okay giving it a chance. I, you know, if Becky wanted to do it, and there's some mixed reporting on how gung-ho she was, but there, you know, there was some sentiment within WWE they wanted to see if she could help elevate some others, and that was the bright side that Becky looked at in terms of it. But, yeah, I don't think she's going to go heel again. So, I mean, the best thing for Becky is to get this epic match over with, do what they're going to do one-on-one, have her be a good sport about it, put in good performances, not do anything to snap at the fans and draw attention to the mediocre responses, and then move on and have her against a heel. That's my thinking, Darren. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good path. I don't think you need to revisit her being a heel. Didn't necessarily take off the last time. I just wonder who the opponents that you're going to have ready for her. I guess there's some people coming from NXT, so I guess they could be fresh opponents. But, yeah, do they do the handshake at the end of WrestleMania? She's a good sport about it. And then someone on the Raw after WrestleMania attacks her from behind, and you go from there. She just splits off, and I think she'll be fine.
Yeah. All right. Are there really enough tag teams to compete in a believable qualifying match for six spots in a tag team ladder match at Mania? The champions get a bye, but that is still 10 teams required for elimination matches between AEW and WWE. We're going to have our fill of tag team tournaments over the next month plus. So they announced before the main event the matches, and I didn't memorize them, so I'm looking up here. New Day against Tozawa and Otis. So, no, they don't have enough credible tag teams because Tozawa and Otis are in it. Champ and Gargano, they answered our question right away. Champ and Gargano against the Creed Brothers. Miz and Truth against Sangha and Veer. Man, they just, it's like they're used like a lot of AEW wrestlers. Like they come in, they show up for a week or two, and then they just disappear for like 5 weeks until they're needed. So yeah, those are the first three qualifying matches on the Raw side. I mean, it's fine. It's not awful. I mean, you know, Otis and Tozawa have been a team. So yeah, I mean, I assume New Day, the Creed Brothers, and isn't Truth end up in the match, Darren? Do you think?
Right. Yeah. So that makes sense. Is Gargano and Ciampa in there?
Yeah, they're against the Creed Brothers, and I think that's why. I mean, that's the harder one to pick, but I think the Creeds will advance.
Yeah, that's gonna be tough. Yeah. So I mean, no, are they great options? No, but there's enough. I think I was more disappointed that Pierce and Aldis said they had a major announcement. It's like, what could that be? And I think this was on the disappointing end of the scale of what a major announcement might entail.
Yeah.
I mean,
do you know what Logan Paul's major podcast announcement is going to be?
No.
Yeah. We'll find out tomorrow. I don't need to.
Oh, did he? I didn't know about this.
They plugged during just coming out, of course.
They?
They said, well, on his podcast, he'll have a big announcement. If you thought the sponsorship in the middle of the ring was a big deal, wait until you release this. They didn't quite put it that way. All right, finally, JB, good question. How is Rock being on the TKO board of directors and being Cody's boss any different in storyline from the Young Bucks being EVPs in AEW? So it's different in the sense that Rock is an executive first and a guest wrestler second, but his primary role before and after, not long before, but before and after this, you know, checking in to be a wrestler again, is sort of this, you know, real life board position. I think there's some skepticism on Cody's part, well founded. Does it make him his boss if he's on the board? I don't know if that's exactly how boards work. And I'm glad Cody said that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there's some similarities. I'm not crazy about it, to be honest, because it just sort of leaves everybody wondering, well, what are his powers, and shouldn't someone find out and tell us? So yeah, I'm not crazy about either scenario, but the difference is the Bucks are full-time wrestlers in their prime, and Rock is primarily a movie star with a not an entirely ceremonial spot on the board, but certainly it's not his main thing, and he's just jumping in, you know, here for, you know, more than a cup of coffee, but it's just a, you know, he's not going to be around full-time. That'd be my take on the difference, and it makes it somewhat better. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I wish they would define that and say what exactly power that he does have. Interesting that Cody did bring that up tonight, but that's kind of a hole that's kind of ambiguous as it is right now, and I'd like them to kind of address that so it's not just like, can he just do anything? Is he even telling the truth that he does have any power? So that's something I'd like to see the next couple of weeks or so.
Yeah. All right. Darren, anything else you want to add about Raw tonight?
Looking through my notes, I think we hit on everything. I mean, the gauntlet match took up so much of it that there's probably less to discuss.
Yeah.
But no, I think we hit most of the major points.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we'll wrap up there then. Thank you, Darren. Tell people a little bit about what you do for the Torch and how they can find that.
Sure. Oh, I cover the live results. Well, it's not live, but I do them as they air on Access TV for TNA Impact and on every Thursday evening. And I do a podcast for the Torch on TNA with John Laszlo, and that should be posted here shortly for the VIP side.
How do you like the TNA era?
It's going well so far. I mean, they had a big splash with guest appearances like Will Ospreay and Okada. I'm not sure what happened to them, but now things are starting to settle down. And yeah, they're on course with their regulars, and things are going well. Nick Nemeth, the former Dolph Ziggler, is settling in, and he's put in some really good performances. He had an excellent match against Steve Macklin at Sacrifice. That was an Impact Plus special that was on Friday. So the last 2 weeks have been pretty busy because they've had two Impact Plus specials, No Surrender and Sacrifice, and they had a quick turnaround. So they've jammed a lot in there. The System, which is a team of Moose, the world champion, and the tag team champions, Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers, are the dominant heel faction, and they're starting to gel and making a pretty effective heel unit. Alicia Edwards is in their corner as well, so it'll be interesting to see where that's headed. But yeah, it's still exciting. They had Scott D'Amore depart, so it's going to be interesting to see what these upcoming TV tapings are like, if they stay the course or if they go in a whole new direction. So it'll be lots to talk about, and hopefully people will listen in to see me and John's thoughts about that.
All right, Darren, thank you as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. And thanks to our listeners, our callers, our emailers, our on-site correspondent, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow on the flagship and then Wednesday night after Dynamite.